Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode number 78, recorded September 16th, 2024. I am your master of ceremonies, as always, Jason Snell. And with me again is the injury expert himself, the author of the Under the Knife newsletter, my pal, Will Carroll. Will, welcome back to Downstream.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Jason. I had a great time and I got some good feedback. Friends were like, wait, you know Jason Snell?
Oh boy.
And I was like, yeah, I don't just use all this Apple stuff. I actually know people.
I need to name drop you more with baseball nerds that I know then. That's what I need to do. That's like, you know baseball prospectus, right? You know Will Carroll, right? So this is Sports Corner, obviously, where this is going to be a kind of a sporty episode because so much of what's happening in the world of sports is streaming is sports and sports is streaming, and it's all kind of going in. And so I like to check in with you every now and then and talk about this stuff, especially since, you know, the last couple of weeks I had Joe Adalian on and Joe does not care about sports at all. So it's a really nice counterpoint to get to talk to you about this stuff. I wanted to start with the NFL because it's back. It's like the, you know, it's a monolith. It lands and then you're like, oh, I guess it's NFL time now. And it's just in the United States for our outside of the US listeners. The NFL is the ruler of the United States. That's basically how it works. And I had a whole bunch of NFL stuff to talk to you about. So I thought we would start there.
We have to.
I wanted to mention the streaming ratings because it's very interesting. So there was a Peacock kickoff game. This was the game in Brazil in week one. It was the second game of the season. And they reported 14.2 million viewers, which was way more than the Peacock regular season game they had last year, which was about half of that. And then Amazon reported nearly 15 million for the Thursday night football opener, which is their third highest number ever, albeit down very slightly from last year's opener. And there are a bunch of things to talk about here. Like one of them is it's good for subscriptions, like the churn. I think what we've learned is that the assumption that everybody's going to sign up to watch a football game and then drop or the Olympics or whatever, and then drop, as far as we can tell, as far as the streamers say, that doesn't really happen. Like some people churn, some people drop out, but it's also a way to just sort of capture people and say, well, now that we've got you, look at all this other stuff. So that's why you spend for the NFL is you get a lot of eyeballs because it's the NFL. And then can you do something with them? And so that thought occurred to me. And the other thought occurred to me is I feel like we're getting very close to 15 million people watching a live sporting event on streaming is no longer a story, which I think is a story, like that it's just a way you watch sports now and that's it.
Yeah. And I think the other indication on that is you don't have people complaining. You know, you get a little bit of it. They're like, oh, where's the game? Well, it's on Prime. We're used to it now. You know, people say, oh, why isn't it on free TV? But those are the people that they're not going to get. You're going to have some people that either can't afford it or decided they're not going to pay for it. And that's fine. But, you know, with these ratings, we're seeing that it is basically the audience is going to find the game, which is exactly what these people wanted.
Yeah,
they're paying a lot of money to bring in people, not just to get new subscribers, though that's nice. But as you said, to keep the churn, to bring in those eyeballs, which are one of the very few guaranteed things. I mean, Prime spent God knows how much money on the Rings of Power. And it's very pretty. It's very well done. But I don't know if anybody, including myself, is excited about it. Nobody's saying, you know, like, this is the greatest show ever. And I think it had such an opportunity with House of Dragon being just off. So I think, streaming is normal. And I think we're going to continue to see that. I know we're going to talk later about the Charter Warner Brothers deal. But if we're repackaging things, you know, there's so much talk about, you know, cutting the cord and breaking up the packages and the bundles. If we're just rebundling in a different way, then all this is just going to be coming back through your cable box like it used to be. And Brian Roberts will be a happy bunny again.
Yeah, there's definitely a trend, and we will mention it again later, but there is a trend now happening in all of these cables. It's fascinating how quickly this flipped. It actually flipped faster than I thought, where the cable deals with distributors are now including streaming packages, mm-hmm. the ad tier, but streaming packages with them. And so if it, basically it seems like where you're going to end up is if you still have a linear TV package with your cable company, it'll probably include many of the streaming services out there so that you can watch for free with ads, which is just like cable, free with ads, a lot of these different streaming services, if not all of them. And like, we're in a transitional phase now, but I think that's fascinating. Obviously, if you're a cable provider, you're a broadband provider too. Maybe not if you're so a little less if you're DirecTV, but if you're Comcast or Charter or anybody like that, you know, you just want to maintain a fiscal relationship with these customers. And if they're paying you and then they're streaming, or they're paying you and you're watching linear, on one level, it probably doesn't matter as long as they're paying you.
Yeah. The thing I'm curious about is twofold. The first is, you know, if it's just another channel, you know, can I opt out of commercials on, you know, other channels? That'd be nice. Yeah. The way that Prime does ads, I haven't opted out of it yet because they don't annoy me.
Interesting.
YouTube, I've come really close just to get rid of the commercials.
I did that. I finally couldn't take it anymore with the ads on YouTube, and I decided, okay, YouTube, you win. I will pay.
Do you feel it's worth it?
Yes, because honestly, every now and then I tap in an app and it tries to load YouTube when I'm not logged in inside the app, and I see the ads start to roll and I'm like, no, hell no. And I am out of there. So yeah, I think it actually has worked. Certainly YouTube feels, it's funny. Julia always talked about this. Julia always said, don't forget about how many people are watching YouTube and even watching YouTube on TV on the, like a physical TV set. And I realized the more, now that I pay for it, like, so I'm not seeing the ads in YouTube. YouTube actually feels more like a streaming service. It feels, it's got that kind of more premium kind of vibe to it. And I do watch a lot of it on my Apple TV, on my TV set. And so they're coming at it from this completely opposite angle, but I think they're getting to a similar destination. It's, I do think it's worth it.
I've really debated it. When they're dropping, you know, two ads in the middle of Hot Ones, it's a bit much.
Yeah.
The only thing worse than that is ESPN's ads, where to watch a 30-second highlight, I got to watch a 30-second ad for something that doesn't feel very targeted. You know, the whole promise of the internet was, well, that's a whole different topic, but the whole promise of video on the internet was that they'd give you these highly targeted ads that wouldn't feel like ads, and they all feel like ads. So yeah, the YouTube thing is interesting to me, especially since, like, I guess it's not illegal, but there's some British TV shows like Grand Designs that aren't shown in America for whatever reason. And so I watch those on YouTube and it's like watching TV. It's, you know, it doesn't feel any different than any other channel I have.
Some shows, because I've got an example here of a show that I love, that it is on YouTube worldwide, and that's purposeful that they decided, and I'm talking about Taskmaster, which is great, fantastic show, and they seem to have decided that they don't have much of a market to sell it to a streaming service or something like that. It's on TV in the UK, but what about the rest of the world? They've sold the format in other markets, but like, what do they do for the internet, which discovered this show and loves it? And the answer is, it's just on YouTube, and they will either make money by putting YouTube ads in it, or you pay for YouTube Premium, at which point they get compensated through that program. And so they're posting their, it's like next day after it airs in the UK, it's just on YouTube. And like, YouTube is their business model for their international streaming. And I'm not sure, I mean, maybe if Netflix came to them and said, we will pay you and write you a big check to put it on Netflix, maybe they'd say yes to that. But I'm not sure they even want to do like individual regional deals for their content. I think maybe they're satisfied with, they have an international streaming partner. It's YouTube, and it's got a and it's got a free, you know, with ads, and a pay tier built in, baked into YouTube.
Yep.
So that's enough.
Exactly. And it's like free money for them. Yeah. They're probably very profitable just on the British market and some of the ancillary sales, like you said. Do you know what channel it is in the UK?
I think it's Channel 4 now.
that's Grand Designs as well. So maybe they're just doing it as policy.
It could be. And it's that's an ad driven channel. So you can drop ads in the ad spots if you want to, and it won't even seem that strange. So anyway, I mean, my point about the streaming ratings is more, I think it's very interesting that we got a 14.2 and a 15 million rating. And I just, for all of the speculation of like, will people watch sports on streaming? The answer is yes. And if you don't like it, I understand that. I've definitely heard from people who are like, oh, I don't want to have to get this app in order to watch this thing. And sometimes it's not even as much about paying for it as it is about the complexity of having which service has which game, and do I have that one? Do I not? Am I logged in? Is there a trial? And I get it, but like, I feel like a lot of that stuff's going to be resolved over the next few years. But this is the future. Like this is it. I think that there will always be stuff on terrestrial TV, on broadcast TV, because that is another great way to have broad reach, but to also have stuff that's in streaming. And keep in mind, NFL games are always broadcast locally in the home team market and visiting team market. It's just the rest of the world that gets it via streaming. So I don't know. It's a world.
You can see some of the other things. Yeah, there's that NFL Plus weird tier that I don't even think the NFL knows what the heck they want to do with that. So it's interesting. You know, I think the curious thing for me about streaming is that it's always been about, you know, control. You know, I would go to Netflix and binge a show. I would go to Apple TV and see basically the new HBO with quality. Even if it wasn't a show I'd loved, I could see how much thought and money, honestly, was being put into it. Now with live streaming, it feels a little disconnected to me, mostly because I think they're experimenting. You know, they did the Joey Chestnut event a couple weeks ago on Labor Day, and that was oddly good. You know, they filled way too much time. It could have been a 10-minute thing, but sure. I guess they needed more.
Well, it's the Kentucky Derby of competitive eating, which is, it's the same. Kentucky Derby is 3 minutes, but they build 90 minutes in of it.
way more. And you know, they've been doing more live things, but like David Chang's cooking show, which is great, that you can watch anytime. So while it's live, there's really not, you don't lose anything by not watching live. They're doing the upcoming fight with Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. And my boxing friends say Mike Tyson is taking it phenomenally seriously, which makes me really worry about Jake Paul. at least a little bit, you know, on a human level. I just don't know what Netflix is really doing. Yeah, they've got a football game later this year, which they're not even producing. I don't get that strategy, and it doesn't feel like they've landed on the right spot yet.
Now, so let's slightly shift gears, because we were talking about YouTube, and you wanted to talk about YouTube and the NFL and highlights and a phenomenon going on there. What was that about?
Yeah, you know, if you go to YouTube and, you know, I want to see the latest music video, it's there. If you want to see, you know, highlights of yesterday's games, they're normally there. You know, there's all these little quick hit things that you can watch while you're sitting in line or waiting on something, or you know, during a commercial, because we have that little attention span these days. There's not much in the way of NFL highlights. And what there is clearly kind of, if not black market, very, very gray. Because the NFL jealously guards their highlights. You know, when you know, you and I back in the day, Jason, you know, we would watch SportsCenter because that's where you saw highlights.
Right.
There wasn't anything else. So everybody would stop, and you know, SportsCenter was the thing, and you'd watch it all morning, or at least I did in college, which explains a lot. So it's one of those things where every place else you can go and get highlights, but they're jealously guarding them despite the fact that they're apart. You know, they have the Sunday Ticket now, They're obviously showing a lot of the games, but if you go to YouTube and try to find highlights, you just don't find them, which I find intriguing. You know, these are stupid large rights. Just to pay for highlight packages. If you watch your local news, if you have a local team, they still, I think it was something like 35 seconds that they could use of the local team before they had to pay millions of dollars. It's crazy how tightly they guard those highlights. And if you get on the wrong side of the NFL, you will discover they don't have a lot in the way of operations, but they have a lot in the way of lawyers on retainer.
So I don't know if this is because I'm a YouTube premium subscriber or one, but I went when you sent me this topic and I found so we're recording this on Monday, the day after the Sunday of week two. And I found like 14 minute long game highlight packages from the NFL's official channel on YouTube.
Wow.
So
that's intriguing. I'm seeing the game highlights as well.
You see it?
So I did not see these last week.
Interesting.
So this is, yeah.
So
this is quite interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, they've got them from week one too. So maybe that was just me. But, you know, the NFL is putting them out there. I think this is great. So I'll completely flip the script here and say, yeah, I think this is great. They need to do this because this is where people go now. We don't watch SportsCenter. I don't know why SportsCenter even exists anymore. It needs to be almost interstitial. This felt to me like the NFL not going where their audience was, but apparently they're smarter than me.
SportsCenter I think not long for this world is the answer. I think SportsCenter as a brand will continue, but it feels like SportsCenter is going to be more like a portal for highlights that you control than it is a show, right? Like they'll just there'll be a new SportsCenter that is where you can stream your games and where you can watch the highlights afterward or something like that. I know that shoulder programming still has some value, but it's more like pregame and postgame of an event rather than a kind of a highlight package.
Exactly. And I think they were kind of early to this, making Scott Van Pelt as much of a talk show
right.
as it was a highlight show, because he's got the personality for that, always has. And so that was good. But the rest of it, I just don't know what's there. I don't know if you, during the Olympics, tried any of those, you know, AI Al Michaels highlights.
Yeah.
They weren't there yet. They were, that was kind of creepy, and B, it didn't make sense to me.
No.
You know, maybe it's early, points to Peacock for trying, but it wasn't there for me.
And the Olympics, okay, so this is a good tangent. The Olympics highlights, the premise was there's so much Olympics that nobody can highlight it all, but you can right. pick, and we'll use AI to generate a highlight package. Mm. The problem with it is, like, what's the broader application of that? Because I've been, and you probably have been, I like 10, 15 years ago, I got a tour of what was then MLB Advanced Media. But among the things that they were doing there that they are still doing, this was back before they were bought by Disney, but they had people in cubicles watching, like they do at ESPN, sitting there watching games and logging them and basically building highlight packages. I think they even had like literally people sitting there at Max with Final Cut just ripping through highlight packages and posting them. And you see it now where in the MLB app, if you're watching a game, like a currently on game, and you go to the MLB app, you will see individual highlights from that game essentially 5 minutes after they happen. So I don't know if there are that many sporting events or leagues that where the business model is such where they can't afford to pay people probably not very much money to sit in a edit bay somewhere, you know, at a Mac, basically marking things and running through highlight packages. It doesn't strike me as being very expensive. I'm not sure an AI system, if they could get the AI system to be as good in order to replace it, then, I mean, so be it. And then there's the idea of the AI Al Michaels who's narrating. But, like, I don't know. I feel like sports events, there are so few sporting events that you probably don't necessarily need an AI system to generate your highlights for you. But I don't know, maybe.
Right.
There's a lot of college football games there's whatever, you know, 50 or 60 of those on any given Saturday. Those might need some AI highlights. But I don't know. I'm a little skeptical, other than the announcer part, because you do have to have an announcer sitting in a studio reading the highlights, and that might be something that that wouldn't work with a human.
I think where the AI is going to be interesting is in the smaller sports. You know, if most small colleges have systems where they're videoing and sending it out just so parents can watch, if nothing else. High school sports, travel sports.
Yeah, I was going to say like college soccer or something like that, where like they're just not going to be able to do it. Yeah.
It's those off sports where that's where I think it goes in, because ESPN is going to pay a million college kids to sit there. And having worked at both, I remember that. It was kids in their first job who knew how to run Final Cut.
Yeah.
And they were really good. They watched the games, click.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'll work at ESPN, which is a whole different story. It's one of those really interesting things in that it seems like you'd save money, but like you said, how much can those kids living, four to an apartment in Bristol, Connecticut, how much can they really be making?
Right. And for a lot of this stuff, it's so distributed now that you could do it from probably anywhere. It's college kid on a college campus doing it. But I see your point. I think if you're one of the conferences, you're the SEC or the ACC or Big Ten, you know, whatever, you look at something like an, you know, AI highlights, and you're like, okay, well, that's really great, because we want to stuff our website and our TV app and all of those things with highlights of all these sports where we're not going to pay to do it, but we've got lacrosse or we've got, you know, men's soccer from, you know, it's Notre Dame against Wake Forest. And you're like, okay, well, we're not going to have somebody cut that custom, but if the AI can scan it and pull out the goals and pull out the shots and assemble something, then that gives us, and so that we can have a wall of every ACC soccer match from this weekend with all the goals. I see it there. I see the value there.
Yeah. And I think, especially for the collegiates, this is where, you know, obviously they've got a bunch of kids wanting to make their name to, you know, learn the job and see if they can be the next sports center anchor. And I think back to Annie Agar, who, you know, went viral with her little Big Ten meetings and then the NFL meetings, and she's gone huge. I forget where she is this year, but there's going to be a bunch of people trying things, and some of them will hit. A lot of them won't, but some of them will hit. And I think in that market, it would be great for those kids to get the chance to, you know, cut their own highlights and pull it off the AI and come up with, some crazy TikTok video that ends up making Ohio for a day.
Yeah, and that's
The Boom Goes the Dynamite guy was from Ball State.
See, that's what I was going to say also, is this is an opportunity for sports media to, you talk about the NFL and certainly on a lot of these leagues patrol like social media. And it always has seemed misguided. I know this is something Julia mentioned a couple of years ago. It always seemed misguided that the leagues would patrol social media to that extent and not realize that everything in there is essentially an ad for their content. And that if you are willing to even provide super fans with the ability to do marked up, you know, cuts of your footage and put their overlay on it and put it on social media, you know, you're going to, you maybe make stars, and also they may know how to market your sport better than you do.
So. Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja, it was just that guy.
Great example.
You know, he would cut up highlights, put them up, and then he got banned from Twitter because he was using MLB highlights. And now he's on every MLB show, and they figured it out pretty quickly that they were making a mistake. So credit to them, but there's got to be lots more of those at virtually every level.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Cal guy, and this last couple of weeks has been funny because Cal beat Auburn, an SEC opponent at Auburn, and there's this whole thing of like, well, how could lowly Cal football beat an SEC team? And then they're 3-0, and they're going to play Florida State this weekend. Florida State 0-3, not really what we expected that matchup to be when it was put on the calendar earlier this year. But what I've noticed,
was there any sort of Tim Cook issue with Auburn?
I went to the Apple event the 2 days after Cal beat Auburn, and I promised my PR person that I would not lord it over Tim Cook. Auburn beat Cal in Berkeley last year. So I think it's fair. It's a home and home. The visitor won both of those, which is weird, but it happens. But, you know, I bring up Cal not just to plug the Bears, go Bears, but to say that I have noticed on, I don't use Twitter much anymore, except for sports, because so much sports conversation still happens on Twitter or X, mm-hmm. but I'm not ever going to call it that. And in the last week, what I found is that not only has Cal Twitter been super excited, and yes, there is a Cal Twitter, but what I've noticed is mm-hmm. that the media, especially the new partners at the ACC network, have been loving Cal Twitter because it gives mm-hmm. them content to talk about. But I think it's one of those examples where if you give the fans a little latitude and you show your creativity and let them have the creativity, there are benefits to the league, the conference, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And seeing, you know, that ACC network has been able to do multiple segments based on jokes from Cal Twitter, like including the creation of the greatest phrase I've heard in the last week, which is the Calgarithm. Mark my words, the Calgarithm. Anyway, it's been fun to see, but it's that example of like, you know, who better to spread the word about your product than its creative fans. So like lean into it, let them do it, and exactly. You'll benefit.
There were so many weird things this year with all the conference realignment, and it's still laughable to hear Cal and Stanford in the ACC.
It is. It is. Trust me.
You know, if it works, it works. And, you know, Florida State being terrible is tough to watch.
Love
I
it.
Got a lot of friends that went there. But yeah,
don't they, worry.
They do.
They play Cal next. They'll feel better. Trust me, I'm a Cal fan. I know how that works. I know exactly how that works. So we'll be sitting here next week and they'll be like, oh, Cal is the cure to what ails you. Because that is kind of true. I wanted to mention the Sunday Ticket trial. We didn't get to talk a chance to talk about it. This is this case where the NFL lost an enormous case about the NFL Sunday Ticket. Now there were some reversals and setting aside of the verdict and appeals and all sorts of things going on. But the door is open a bit now in terms of TV rights and leagues and exclusivity, and like this court case may have a lot of huge follow-on impacts, but you wanted to talk about why nobody covered it. I mean, like Puck News covered it, right? But like nobody covered it.
Yeah. And you know, they do a great job. It's one of the nice new outlets, but almost nobody talked about it.
Is it because they're all NFL partners?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly it. And you know, it was complex. But I thought the idea of Jerry Jones being on the stand was going to be huge. You know, maybe we were going to see inside the books of an NFL team. Maybe we're going to see Jerry Jones embarrassed and having to talk about all the crazy crap he does. But no. It was nothing. It turned into a big nothing burger because the NFL controls the narrative so much. And nobody was going to pee in their cornflakes or risk it. Even on something that was maybe going to be $20 billion, we knew it was never going to be.
Yeah.
It's like falling on a Trump trial. Yeah. You know it's going to go on forever. It's going to get appealed 1,000 times. The lawyers are going to be the
and
only
it's the
lawyers.
NFL, the house always wins, right? I mean, like the exactly. NFL always wins. They always win. Even when they lose, they win.
You have successfully connected
it back to the USFL antitrust trial there, too, which is great. So, because that was Donald Trump as well.
But you know, it's funny. You say the house always wins. When you take a look at all the gambling money that's flowing up to the teams, because the teams own a significant stake, at least the owners of teams own significant stakes in a lot of the gambling houses. You know, the house isn't winning there. It's the NFL is the houseier house. It's the housest.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. This is true. This is true. Anyway, I think that's a good point. Always ask yourself why is, you know, who in anything, and you mentioned SportsCenter, I would say it with that too, is always pay attention to who the partners are. And again, I'm not saying that there's necessarily somebody hanging over the people at ESPN or anywhere else, NBC News, you name it, and saying, don't cover this story. They don't have to. Although sometimes they will, and then that can become a scandal, but they don't have to. Like, everybody knows that the NFL is the most rated, highly rated thing on our network, whoever you are, because it is. And that's the advantage when we're going to talk about media rights in a minute. That is one of the advantages, I think, with having multiple media rights packages, is that the NFL recognizes that it's a lot easier to be the NFL when you have Fox and NBC and CBS and ESPN ABC and Amazon and Netflix as partners. Like, who's not an NFL partner at this point? So,
me? That's about it.
I mean, they could call us. Sponsoring Sports Corner could be right around the corner for the NFL. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Tract. If you're feeling overwhelmed, not knowing what to watch next, let Tract be your perfect companion for tracking what you watch. Tract helps you discover what's popular and where to stream it. They provide links for hundreds of different streaming services worldwide. Yeah, there are hundreds of streaming services now. Like a lot of us, you probably stream from a variety of different services. Tract knows your favorites. It'll automatically notify you when something's available to stream, but it's not just about discovering new content. It's great, this is so good, for staying up on top of whatever you're already watching. Don't get lost. Like, did we finish that show? Is it still on? The Up Next feature in Tract organizes all the shows you follow into a simple checklist, so you will never miss another episode. My wife and I have been using that at our house. It's so nice to sit down and be like, God, is there a new episode of that thing? Did we finish that thing? Was that the season finale or not? It's all there. It's all there. And if you prefer to use a media center app like Plex or Kodi, there are even more integration options with dedicated plugins for those platforms. Even better, they'll track what you're watching and make it easy to sync your media across devices. We have used it. We have really liked it. It's so hard to keep track of this stuff. I can't tell you how many shows we just forget that we're in the middle of. We get distracted. There's something else going on. And then 6 months pass. We're like, whatever happened to that show? We literally didn't finish it. It's the worst. One of the coolest features in Tract is the year in review. The end of the year, it visualizes all your viewing habits from your most watched shows to the day of the week you're most likely to binge. Really interesting. I like the quantified self. This is a really cool idea. Look back at a year in review. Share your insights with fellow lovers of film and TV. Yeah, films too, not just TV shows. Leave comments, rate movies, engage with the community. It's all in there on the web. On Android, on iOS, and now on Apple TV. Yeah, that's right. And you can get a 50% discount on the Tract VIP by going to tract.tv/downstream. That's tract.tv/downstream for a 50% discount on their VIP level. Now, Tract is one of the best services to track what you're watching, to get personalized recommendations and discover new stuff and new movies. Tract.tv/downstream, tract.tv/downstream for a 50% discount on your first year of VIP. Thank you to Tract for supporting Downstream. All right. I think that brings us to the end of the show. Now, if you are not a Downstream Plus subscriber, you missed a lot of the things we talked about today, because we did talk about Diamond Sports and whether Venue is over or not. We talked about Apple's immersive Super Bowl stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we covered in the second half of the show that you missed, because every other episode, most of the show is available just for supporters. If you are not yet a supporter, go to downstream.plus. You'll get full versions of every single episode, as well as access to the awesome Relay Discord, bonus shows from Relay, and a whole lot more. Will, what's the best, what do you want to plug? What's the best place for people to find what you do?
You can find me at undertheknife.substack.com, where I talk about injuries. Or, you know, if you want to find my cutting edge company that tells you whether or not baseball and softball players are going to be clutch, you can check it out at Intangible, Intangible without the I, intangible.co.
Intangible.co. Awesome. Thank you for being here. I hope to have you back sometime soon. We'll do some more Mega Sports Corner.
Anytime, Jason.
Awesome. And thanks to everybody out there for listening. You can find me, of course, sixcolors.com and many other podcasts here at Relay and over at theincomparable.com. Until next time, bye-bye.